Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Amateur Sports Talk.
Hello?
Featuring Coach Allison.
Hello?
Sponsored by AmateurAthletes.com.
Hello?
Today's show is about MMA fighters.
Hello?
We're going to take our gloves off and get right down to it. So today's show, I am featuring superstars of the MMA. I mean, you're not going to believe who's on this show. We've got Dan the Beast Severn, Tisha Torres, the Tiny Tornado, Randy Couture. I mean, these people have done everything in the UFC and in the MMA. I mean, they are big timers. Hey, guys, are y'all on the line?
Hello.
Okay, you've got Dan Severn.
This is Tisha as
well.
Hey,
Dan. Hey, Tisha.
Hey, this is Mark from Wombat Sports. I'm joining in on with you as well, guys.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. All right, guys. So, you know, first off, I just want to go through and have you kind of tell who you are. I know everybody pretty much knows who you are in the MMA world, but we'll start with Tisha. You know, ladies first.
Okay. My name is Tisha Torres. They call me the Tiny Tornado, currently a UFC strawweight and formerly with Invicta.
Nice. And so how long have you actually been doing professional fighting?
I got signed with the UFC in December of 2014, but I had my first fight in December of 2015 with the UFC. So I guess that was my UFC debut there.
Nice.
Yeah, and I think Tisha was professional before then. She was I think Invicta.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I started with Invicta in 2012. That was my, in I think July or October 2012, something like that.
Okay, so a couple years you've been pro, and I know you were amateur before that, and you had a unbelievable amateur record, which is awesome.
Yeah, I was an amateur in 2008. So I guess for 4 years.
Right. So we also have Dan the Beast Severn on the line, and Dan has been in the MMA for a long time. So, Dan, can you tell everybody who you are, a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Basically, say I've been involved with it since it first began. You know, my career started in that industry in 1994. Basically, the very first UFC show that ever took place, UFC number one, was in December of 1993, so it really wasn't that far after it started that UFC number four was my very first one. So when you think about number four and now what are we closing in on, number 200, so that says a lot for itself, and I've been involved with it, that industry, for practically, I just have a 20-year career.
Right, so you pretty much opened the door for a lot of these fighters now.
Well, I'll say that I weathered the storm going through. Most of your listenership is only used to the terms MMA, which stands for mixed martial arts. Not many of them are used to the terms NHB or Noble Bard. Martial arts has approximately 41 rules. Part of those 41 rules are weight classes, time periods known as rounds, and you know, athletes that wear gloves and you fight one opponent in a given evening, whereas back in the NHB, No Holds Barred era, there were only two basic rules that the athletes had to abide by, those being no biting, no eye gouging, into the rules. And
right.
So I say to people, whatever your imagination you could think of, you were good to go. No weight classes, no time periods, bare-knuckled action, and it had the element of the eight-person tournament. And the same two-hour pay-per-view that still plays to this day, you had to finish off three opponents in that same time period. So, you know, just through the athletic commissions and various legislators and that, that kind of came down upon that crazy, wild sport era, It has morphed into the mixed martial arts product that it is today.
I will mention
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say that, first of all, I'm a huge fan of Dan's. I've watched him since UFC 3, and he's actually opened the doors a lot for the amateur wrestlers coming in. He was the first MMA fighter that was really truly an amateur wrestler coming into the sport, and that drove a lot of the guys from wrestling to make the move over to MMA, which is a huge deal. So I think that's a huge accomplishment for the sport, especially with amateur wrestlers, because they didn't really have many options after they went to college.
Yeah.
They could have went through the Olympics or whatever, but Dan opened that door for another route for them to have a sport to participate in.
Yeah, and I'll say it's
exactly.
Kind of a two-part, that's always like a two-part dilemma, though, too, because now there are some amateur, say, high school wrestlers that are opting not to go to college. First, they want to try their hand at mixed martial arts. And then there's some collegiate athletes that are looking at that as a opportunity as well. And there is an off-season or something like that to take in hand. So there's a double-edged sword to that. I keep saying I'd rather see them get a degree because being in the pugilistic arts, the fighting arts, there is not a real, what I call a real strong future into it, because typically you have a game plan, your opponent has a game plan, and neither one of your game plans quite mesh up with each other, so it's always good to have other options to go along with it.
Right.
Yeah, speaking
and
of which, not to hijack your interview real quick, one thing I want to add is that for Tisha is the fact that she is actually pursuing her criminal justice degree. First of all, congratulations, Tisha, on getting all A's this semester.
He's
a prime example of what Dan was talking about.
Thank
right.
you.
Right,
and
that's what I was
going to
bring
first
up.
Semester
you know,
graduate school.
There you go. So, Tisha, I know you recently... Hard. You know, you recently did go professional, and you have more recently than anyone else been an amateur. So what advice can you give anyone listening how to get where you are now?
I've been a big pusher, I guess. I don't know, a big advocate of education as well. I pursued my undergraduate while I was an amateur. I was an amateur from 2008 to 2012, but I graduated college in 2010. So during that time, I was, you know, fighting and going to school. So I think that you definitely, and everybody says, oh, you have something to fall back on. It's never been a fallback. It's always been my plan to use my education one day. But I just became, you know, really good at fighting, and I wanted to use my youth while I have it. And for the next few years, I'll be doing this. And then when I graduate, you know, next year, maybe I'll go off into that career, or I'll wait, you know, a year or two more. But for amateurs, I say experience, because oftentimes you'll see them, you know, try to rush things because maybe they think that the money is going to be there, when in reality, when you first start, the money is, you know, it's not great. And there's very few that will actually make it to, you know, the UFC, and that's a truth. It's the reality. So you have to have other options, or, you know, options, and then this be your love. You know, I love doing this. I had 27 amateur fights before going pro, you know, with kickboxing and MMA. And, you know, experience is my number one thing. And then a second, I would say, you know, find a reputable gym. And if you're a female, find a gym with other females. I mean, you can train with men. But if you don't have one close in your area, find, you know, gyms to cross-train with, because as a female, our bodies are just so different than men. It really does help having other female training partners.
Right. And do y'all have anything to add to that as far as advice for any amateurs that are wanting to get started in the MMA field?
Was that directed to me?
Yeah, Mark or Dan, either one of you. Do you have anything to add to that?
I think Tisha did it right. I think amateur is a really kind of a proving ground for yourself, and to really kind of shape up your game to the point where you feel like you can turn professional. I think the biggest piece of information would be not to rush it. I know a lot of these girls want to rush now up to the professional level just because there's so many more opportunities for them now. You know, I think the amateur is very important in terms of just getting that experience under your belt, working out any kind of kinks in your game. And you don't have to rush through it and you know, turn pro in 6 months or a year or something like that. Like I said, Tisha did it right. You just go through it. You work your game until you feel you and your coach and your team feel that it's the right time to turn pro, and then turn it. And those opportunities will come if you say, I'm going to turn pro, well, sometimes even it's the fact that somebody comes up and says, oh, we have a professional position open. Sometimes it just happens that way as well. I don't know how it was with Tisha, but I hear a lot of stories where some of these girls, you know, get to that point where they're still in the amateurs, but this opportunity for pro debut comes up. And then sometimes it is the right time for them to take it, and sometimes it's not. So that decision's got to weigh heavy on you. And you got to make sure that you're ready and all the kinks are together. Because once you hit that professional level, the losses count a lot more, and those mistakes could be a little bit more costly.
Right. So Dan, I know before, you know, prior to going professional and everything, you were an amateur wrestler and All-American at Arizona State. Can you tell everyone what that experience did to lead to, you know, your professional career and getting to where you are?
Yeah, let me touch on that kind of twofold. I mean, to kind of answer on the question you asked about before about, you know, what would you advise to young amateur athletes? I've always been a big advocate of education as well. I've always said don't put all your eggs in one basket, as I did earlier. You know, putting all your eggs in the basket of the fight world is not exactly a very intelligent decision because, as I said, you have a goal, your opponent has a goal, and I guarantee you both your goals are not meshing up with each other. Someone's about to have their plans uprooted here pretty quick. Mixed martial arts is one of those types of sports that I refer to it as a human chess match, where basically checkmate hurts because you're going to be submitted, you're going to be tapped out, you're going to be knocked out, TKO'd, and usually you're taking some type of physical punishment with this as well. My little elaboration about my background, I did not have an amateur MMA career. There was nothing like that existed at the time. There was strictly just jumping straight into the UFC. It was, you know, at that point in time, you had a lot of one-dimensional athletes, and I throw myself in that same category of just boxers, just kickboxers, karate, Muay Thai, Kung Fu. You had sambo practitioners, jiu-jitsu practitioners, amateur wrestlers. So it, you know, when people would ask me all the time, well, when did the sport start to change? I said after the very first time of seeing it, it started to change already because as a wrestler, as I start to analyze this, I'm thinking, well, the match is starting on its feet. I need survival skills of how either not to be struck or how to go on the offensive so I could get to my clinches, my takedowns, or jamming my opponent up against the cage wall. So once I ended up getting into a clinch situation, well, I was good to go at that point in time. But then working on close quarter combatants, so the sport will continue to evolve more and more as time progresses on. So like I said, I jumped right into this pro-level type of thing. Only really ever anticipating just doing one event because I did not know how that one event was going to go. Well, it went well. I did the next one that led into the first year, the fifth year, the tenth year, and basically 19 years later, it's kind of like going, you know, when you start giving up 2+ decades of age to younger opponents, I could always see that my skill set was starting to slip. And I said, I better learn to exit this game before one of these young bucks wrecks me into retirement, and then I will have health issues for the rest of my life. So I basically went into the game on my terms, and I left it on my terms, which not too many athletes, I think, will be able to say something like that. But I'm a bit, as I said earlier, a big advocate of education, having all types of options. Now, I have a teaching degree from Arizona State. I've been involved in the sport of amateur wrestling since 1969, been teaching it since 1971, and won my first national title in 72, which is my way of saying I've been around sports and athletics my entire life, and I enjoy the teaching aspect of it and sharing, and I'll continue to do that as many years as my body will allow me.
Right. And that's what it all comes down to is, you know, if you love the sport, you do it as long as you possibly can.
Yes. Well, again, well, it's, well, again, it's kind of like off the subject right now, but just this past weekend I was dealing with the family matters, and that's the aging parents, not mine, but my in-laws, and that one is in one hospital from a heart attack, and then which is, you know, they're on the mend, they'll be as good as they possibly can be, but they're as good as possibly what they can be for a almost 80-year-old person, and then my father-in-law is on sites of dementia, things of that nature. He's actually in a home right now because he'll come in and out. So it's kind of like one of those things where, you know, that's towards the end. I always say in the game of life, no one's getting out of alive. And it's just kind of, it's tough, some of the realizations of what you do. And I don't know why I went off at this scope, but it also has to do with, the head concussions and that head trauma that a lot of athletes have to be wary of as well. Because even in practice, there are certain head trauma that is taking place if you are working at a gym that doesn't have a good coaching staff that puts together proper safety gear and just knows how to control the format of a workout. You see, you know, just utilizing just the best known company in the world of mixed martial arts, UFC, you will see a lot of changes on a proposed card that is coming on up. You have seen that card change 100%. Whoever was supposed to be fighting in the first place, one of the opponents got hurt, was replaced just to have the other guy, other person get injured somewhere online and have to be replaced. So it's you really, you know, that's what both ladies have said here before, and I'm just kind of reiterating it. You have to get with good coaches, with good, safe training partners as well.
Right. So, Tisha, being a woman in the MMA, you know, what struggles have you dealt with? What advice can you give to a female that's wanting to get started in this industry?
Well, exactly the kind of things I just said, you know, find, like you just said, a reputable gym. There's lots of gyms nowadays that will, you know, claim to be this and that, but really they don't have proper instruction. So just, you know, a good gym with other females. But in the past, you know, when I first started, there weren't many options for females. You know, I came in a time when it was growing and growing at a good pace. But, you know, in the beginning, the UFC was never an option for us. Dana White said there would never be any females in the UFC. And then came along Ronda Rousey. She opened the doors for us. And now, you know, we have two weight classes in the UFC for women, and a third potentially now with this next fight with Joanne Caldwell and Valeria Turner at 125. I think, you know, that the things are changing for women, and hopefully they're going to continue to do so. Now with this next, you know, Ultimate Fighter, there's more 115 girls. So I think they're just going to be bigger and better opportunities. And I really love Invicta, how they promote women's MMA and how it's an all-female, you know, promotion. And I think that really is the backbone for, you know, the girls in the UFC today. And without, you know, Invicta, I don't know if there would have been a UFC because the talent, I don't think, would have been discovered.
Right. Well, we have two callers on the phone, so let me answer these callers real quick. Hi, you're on the line with Dan Severn and Tisha Torres.
Hello?
Hello?
Would you like to ask a question to one of our guests?
So I am in mixed martial arts, and, you know, it's really basic, but I was wondering how you could go pro with it, because, you know, I want to take it to the next step, and I don't think the place I'm at right now is ready for that.
Who's answering that?
Who wants to take that question?
I didn't quite understand what all he's already involved in mixed martial arts, and he wants to know he didn't feel like he's in the right place in order to move on up. Is that my understanding?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, again, that boils right down to what she said. I've been reiterating there that part of going to a good gym, that gym also should have contacts that will help you either go from your amateur level, start progressing into your entry level of your pro level, and then start progressing on further and further to the point that if you really want to try to take it onto the highest level, hopefully that gym has those types of outlets for you, those types of contacts are for you. And that's usually the sign that a lot of the better gyms is they do have those type of contacts, and knowing that if you do put in the hard work and the training and you have the type of record that they're looking for, you will get that opportunity eventually.
Gotcha. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thank you, caller, for calling in. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. And we have another caller on the line. Let's answer this call. Hey, you're on the line with Dan Severn and Tisha Torres. How are you?
Oh, that's me. This is Sean Kilgus.
Hey, Sean, how are you?
I thought I was supposed to be in the show from
Hey,
earlier.
And you know Dan, so
yeah.
You were going to, I guess, talk about the Hall of Fame a little bit and things like that, because Dan is involved in the Hall of Fame.
Well, yes, and I was trying to talk. I didn't know that I was muted at the time, and I had thought I was in on the interview from the from the time it had started, so I was trying to comment on some of the other things, and I realized nobody was hearing me, so. and just to go back on, some of the things that Tisha had even said about the amateur careers and where we came up as well, I came up in a whole different era right behind Dan. I had fought when I was 15 years old in 1998, so it was actually still technically the end of the NHB era and starting to become the MMA era. A lot of experience there, and obviously, just like Tisha had said, it's a hard road to go from the low levels of fighting and how do you sustain an income and how do you, make it to the big leagues, Now, me, on the other hand, I didn't make it, and that's sort of some of the advice that I have for the listeners is that, I didn't really make it to the big show. I had some key opportunities. I missed them. Things happen in your fight career. But I have pursued my dream for a long time, and it's brought me to where I am. I own a martial arts studio that's doing really well. I'm the president of the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame. And so I've continued to pursue being in the industry. And I can tell the listeners out there that even, if you don't make it to the big time, let's say you're never a world champion, that you should not stop pursuing that because it's going to lead you down other avenues, other doors may open. I am not where I thought I was going to be. I thought I was going to be a UFC, champion one day, when I was a kid, 11 years old when I watched the first UFC. And, that didn't happen. I started fighting really young. I had some different opportunities, and it was a very tough era back then because nobody even knew we existed. And
aren't there different levels of the amateur level? Can't you start amateur, semi-pro, something like that, or is it all just amateur and then pro?
Well, it depends
ahead,
on
Dan.
What country.
Oh, Tisha, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it depends on what country. I mean, a lot of the countries like Great Britain and Australia do have semi-pro bouts, in New Zealand as well, I believe. But here in the United States, I don't think there's really any kind of levels, although I do know that there's some pancration matches that they have for some people that are under the age of 18 that they do. which has a lot more extensive rules than what amateur MMA would have here in the States. So it really depends on where you are at. But for the most part here in the United States, there's just one amateur level, and that's pretty much it. I know, Nisha, you need to go, but I wanted to, you know, say, is there any shout-outs or anything that you want to give out real quick?
Just to my mom. She's listening in. So, hi, Mom. And that's it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Tisha. I appreciate you coming on, and good luck with the remainder of your career.
Thank you, and you guys have a good day. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
So, what exactly would need to be achieved, you know, if someone was wanting to go from amateur to pro, what would they need to achieve? Is there a certain number of, you know, matches they have to win, or how does that work?
You know, something you had asked me about the other day when we were talking, Allison, you know, and what they just said, there's really no semi-pro league. You kind of, here's the difference, here's the thing with MMA fighting, is that there's, you know, you're either amateur or you're pro, and it simply comes down to if you've been paid. You know, unless you've been paid, you're a pro. So there's certainly, as far as amateurs, there's not much as far as different levels of amateurs, but there's certainly different levels of pro. And I would consider, you know, most people semi-pro by, you know, the way you said it to me the other day in relation to how your website works. Most of the guys that are fighting and most of the people in the industry getting started, they're not full-time pro fighters. They're working a job. They're doing construction. They're working in restaurants. They're really busting their hump to be able to pay for training and, you know, have to train and get ready for fight. So that's the different levels of it. You know, as they grow and they get their name out there, they start to become, you know, known. They start to get sponsors. And then they start to be able to focus more on just being a pro fighter. And that's when their careers will start to blossom. As when they get to that level where they can just focus on fighting. So.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of UFC fighters that don't get paid it well enough. So some still do have jobs actually too.
Yeah,
right.
That's true. Very true.
So I know a lot of amateur fighters out there are wanting to know, what are some avenues that they can take to get their name out there, to get some more recognition? What advice do you guys have?
I'm going to jump in there. Larger organizations, I think. Go ahead. Okay, I'll go. some of the bigger organizations, I would say, you know, television and the UFC Fight Pass have done a lot in terms of getting some of the exposure to some of these people. I would say, you know, Toughnut right now, I think, it was the kind of the revolutionary force behind what is now the amateur ranks of MMA. They started, I think, a few years after either the UFC started, maybe sometime in, I think, late 90s, early 2000s. And they kind of was one of the few. Them and Hook and Shoot were the two kind of players in the amateur divisions, and now we're seeing this ad a lot more often. But Tough Enough, Legacies, I think, has an amateur division. RFA has an amateur division. Those are the ones that have, like, this main – and Titan, I believe, has amateurs as well. A lot of these organizations that do have television time, King of the Cage also does amateurs as well. A lot of these organizations that have television time and streaming – is a big part of it too, because you're going to see these people, their up and coming fighters, on these cars, televisionized cars, a lot of times, and they're going to, you know, get some exposure in terms of who they are and all that as well. So that's why it's so important for some of these amateurs to have. A lot of these amateurs do have sponsors, even though they're not being paid by the organization, and so it does help them in terms of their training to have a spotlight on them. So I think that's probably the best answer to your question.
Okay, well, we have a caller on the phone, Mark, so let's answer the caller. Hey, caller, how are you? You are calling in to Amateur Sports Talk.
Hi, this is Dylan Atkinson from Oregon.
Hey, Dylan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I apologize. I haven't didn't get to listen to the beginning part of this. I'm just on my lunch right now, so I'm not 100% sure what you guys are talking about, but I had a few questions for Randy.
Well, Randy is not on the call right now, but you can ask Dan a question.
Well, okay. Yeah, so I'm starting to develop my own program. It's not necessarily going to be MMA related or anything, but it's youth development related. And I was just kind of hoping to get a little bit of advice on steps to move forward.
Well, when you say develop your own program, what does it mean? You mean just starting in your level of mixed martial arts, or I guess a little bit more?
Yeah, so a little bit of background on me is I've been a manager for MMA gym for the last 5 years. I'm a professional fighter. I'm 2-2 in Portland. And I did successfully open my own gym once, but it was, you know, blah, 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 in somebody else's name and everything like that. So now I'm interested in starting my own program. It's going to be youth-oriented, and I'm just kind of having a hard time getting funding and everything like that and getting people to listen to an idea that's not necessarily basic. So I was just hoping to get some advice from you know, you guys that have been there.
Well, I mean, that's going to be kind of interesting, putting together a youth MMA program. I think that most parents would be looking at it as different increments of it, of the sporting aspect, you know, doing, say, a jiu-jitsu class, say, doing learning how to box or kickbox as a class, putting it all together. I know that there are some places that are doing that at a very young age, but it boils down to it that there's a lot of parents that really don't want to see their daughter or their son going out there and actually, you know, gloving up and punching each other. So that's, I think, what might be a little bit of a stigma that you'll have a difficulty with. But I think you still would have a lot of success with the, just the individual sports, you know, as, you know, as singularly, and then, you know, I don't know if someone else wants to jump in on that to help answer that question.
Absolutely, because, you know, that's what I do. You know, I run a jiu-jitsu facility. I run, it's supposed to be a mixed martial arts facility, but I run it in an area that's a camp area, and I focus my business on that. And so I teach, you know, our school is World Jiu-Jitsu Academy. We teach jiu-jitsu. That's our specialty. We have a great student program. You know, so that's exactly what Dan just said. You want to focus on an art, you know, whether it's jiu-jitsu, karate, whatever your niche is, and focus on that art. You're going to certainly need some funding. I self-funded my school, you know, and I had to start it very small. You know, it was in a little small building, and I've slowly grown that, you know. You're going to need a way to get out in the community and advertise, whether it's flyers, whether you're doing it through Facebook or social media, you know, and let people know that you have a school. You know, if you're in an area where you know a bunch of people, then you have an in right there, and use those people. You know, you certainly have to talk to people you know if you want to grow a school. You know, as far as getting funding, you know, that's the hard part. You know, like I said, I had to self-fund my project, so I had to start it really small. You know, I'm just now in a position where my business is big enough that I can go and get loans and continue to expand my business. You know, but the starting stages for growing that kind of program, they're hard, man. You have to put a lot of work in, a lot of work in.
Does that answer your question, Dylan?
Yeah. Thank you very, very much. It kind of does. Mine's actually not MMA related. I'm currently a Muay Thai youth instructor, and I have 80 students currently in my program. And I'm trying to change what my vision is for a more overall youth fitness program to be like. Rock climbing and hiking and swimming and running form and body weight training and stuff like that is what I'm trying to change mine into, which there's no programs like that. So when I talk to people about it, they kind of get off-putting which was a surprise to me. I would have thought that people would have like just been like, no, that sounds like a great idea, but it's actually sort of off-putting when people do it. So I'm trying to get around that hurdle right now.
You know, I would just add slowly. I wouldn't try to put all my eggs in one basket. You don't want to do it too fast if you don't have too much on your plate. You know, if you want to add weight training, you know, or you want to add another aspect, just do it once, and then when you feel comfortable, then add another aspect. I don't think you should do it all at once, and just take your time.
Absolutely, okay. I agree with that.
All right, Dylan. Well, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you very, very much. You guys have a good day.
You too. All right, so back on, you know, dealing with amateur athletes and things that they can do to get their name out there. I know we were talking about that before the caller. So does anybody have any other advice about that?
Dan, I mean, I do a little bit, you know, myself. Dan, or...
I'll just jump in there on that. Is that, I mean, social medias are still huge, and you know, getting your name out there, knowing that you're competing for with reputable MMA companies as well, because you know, just overnight, you know, the pro level is set in stone with the unified rules, but you can go from state to state and look what kind of rules that they have in place, and they are vastly different from each other, and including certain states, such as like Michigan, where I'm from. It wasn't until just this year, I think around in the month of February or March, that they finally implemented some type of amateur level rules. Prior to that, it was like the Wild Wild West, where any Tom, Dick, and Harry could run a program, and they really did not have the athlete's intent in mind whatsoever. So, you know, being with a reputable company, making certain that you know, records are being posted, things of that nature, that helps. That's all just different ways of getting your name recognition. But you, as that individual, just have to be aggressive in the sense that take it upon yourself to put together a quick little electronic style athletic resume. Put a couple pictures on there, you know, a mug shot, a couple body shots, and send it off to other area promoters or the next state over promotion. You got to start little and kind of build from there. Now, there are exceptional athletes that, you know, there is no golden number of how many matches you should have as an amateur now before turning pro. I think that will probably change down the road. You know, make sure that you are on a winning note and you're not just the local yokel champion of an area that is basically weak in the first place. And then, because I would say that if you move on to that next level, promoters and promotions can work all kinds of angles on their shows to where they can match up with people that you will beat each and every time until you finally are thrown into a real promotion that tries to actually match up per your records and what your athletic ability is, and then all of a sudden you are in the battle of your life.
Yeah, to expand on what Dan's saying, you know, another recommendation would be the fact to fight in another region of this country. I've been asked so many times why I don't do amateur rankings on my site, and the simple thing is that exactly what Dan's saying. We don't know the quality of competition in certain regions of the area. Some people have a lot of great fighters, while other regions have, you know, maybe not have the best training in the world, or some of these fighters haven't gotten good enough training and are being know the promoter and they're being thrown, you know, kind of give me fights. So if you really do want to test yourself, and this is, like I said, again, the beauty of amateurs, if you end up losing, that doesn't matter really until you turn pro. So you know, I'd recommend, you know, a fighter, you know, at some certain point go to a Tough Enough or go to a Legacy, go to an RFA, go to a King of the Cage. And that way you really are tested in terms of what's your skill level is. And if you lose, then, you know, you can always go back and work on the things that you don't have. And also to expand on what Dan was saying, I mean, New York did not have any amateur regulation until that bill passed. And that's something I don't think people realize, that besides the fact that now pro MMA is now legal in New York, but they're also implementing new rules for the amateur divisions. So that's not going to be Wild Wild West anymore in terms of it, because there was some scary stories I was hearing out of New York. So, I think both of those things are really important in terms of it as well. And finally, I want to mention the International MMA Federation, which they are doing a really great job of bringing amateur MMA to the planet, basically. They're working with a lot of different countries to develop amateur programs, and they have their own set of rules that they're implementing. And if you're a member of the organization, not only the fact that you're getting the resources of them giving you trained referees and being able to train referees and officials for your country, all the way to implementing these rules, the fact that you're also going to get some of these athletes the ability to be on a worldwide stage in terms of their international tournament. They'll be doing their third annual International MMA Federation World Tournament coming up in Vegas, coming up on during Fight Week of USC in July, which is absolutely great. I was there last year, and it's a great platform for some of these international fighters that are amateur to get a stage as well. So I wanted to give a quick shout-out to them.
Right, and I think that's a great opportunity. And what Dan was saying, too, about the power of social media, now wrestlers have that option, MMA fighters have that option, you know, to put themselves out there on social media. And I know our sponsor, AmateurAthletes.com, they do that. You know, they're a profile and a platform where athletes can go online and create a free profile, share their information, and get a URL to share with the world. So that's a great opportunity right there for those amateur athletes to be able to do.
Yeah, you know, and really in terms of the female community, I think it's very, very tight-knit in terms of the female fight community. So, once you get that Twitter handle in, then, you know, you're going to be plugged into a huge network of fans and fighters. And I've seen so many opportunities where these girls get the opportunity to get help from professional fighters. You know, they just met on Twitter and they say, oh, can we meet up and train, or can I come out and train with you? And that opportunity is there as well. And Amateur Fighters does do a lot what Dan was saying in terms of getting videos out there, your social media out there as well, and getting some of this marketing material out there.
Right, and I know y'all are also...
Ahead, I was just going to say real quick, no, I absolutely agree to what they were saying. You know, as far as, obviously different states and their regulatory bodies, because we've gone through that here in Georgia as well. We have neighboring states that still, you know, don't have the regulations. But, you know, Tisha had said it, and our female guest is still on the phone. What's your name, sweetie? I didn't catch
it. It's not a female. It's a male. I know you guys are saying I'm a female. This is Mark from Wombat Sports. I think we've talked before, right?
Mark, yeah, possibly. Yes, Mark. I'm sorry. Sorry
not
about that.
Not a problem at all.
Okay. So, so Mark, yeah, and Tisha had said the same thing, especially for a lot of amateur fighters, they make the mistake of trying to go pro too fast, you know, and taking a lot of amateur fights is a big deal. And while you're doing that, besides, you know, honing your skills, you also have to hone your ability to draw in a crowd, to be an entertainer, you know, get in the ring. You know, it's become such a big show from when I started, you know, to where we have, people televising, you know, smaller events, and you have people there interviewing people. And when I started, you didn't see that. You know, you have to be an entertainer these days, you know, so you have to be able to get in there and speak well and do a lot of other things other than just fight. So, you know, use your amateur time to hone all of those skills, not just your fighting skills, but your ability to talk to people, to get on the mic, say entertaining things, and keep the crowd interested in what you're doing. That's very important.
Right, and I know you are involved with the Hall of Fame, so can you tell everybody a little bit about that? And I know Dan's helping out with that a little bit too.
Yes. The Legends of MMA Hall of Fame is the first all-inclusive MMA Hall of Fame. And when I say that, you know, a lot of people know of individual brands, UFC, Bellator, whatever, and some of these different brands have their own Hall of Fame. The Legends of MMA Hall of Fame is, you know, we're inducting everybody. You know, not, I don't say everybody. Obviously, you have to earn your spot into any Hall of Fame, of course. But, you know, there are other organizations that, you know, maybe the general public doesn't know about because they started a long time ago. You know, you have the Pancrase organization, you know, Pride, you know, King of the Cage. There's a lot of other organizations that were really big back in the day when we all started doing this. And, you know, people that were pioneers of the sport, that we're recognizing them as well. We also have, you know, we've inducted the original founder of the UFC, Art Davey, into the Hall of Fame. There's different people that, you know, might not be in certain Hall of Fames, but they're in the Legends of MMA Hall of Fame. And they might not, you know, they might not be qualified to be in the UFC Hall of Fame because they never fought for the UFC. And that's very important. I'll actually defer over to Dan because he always has some interesting comments about, you know, how our Hall of Fame works as far as, you know, how we come up with our inductees. And because that's also very important. I think it's, you know, it's a good thing for people to hear that from Dan because, you know, besides that, our organization is also about building the sport in total. It's not just about, you know, inducting people, but it's certainly getting the word out there and helping the growth of our sport for all people. So, but yeah, Dan usually has some interesting comments, you know, that helps people understand what we're doing as far as the Hall of Fame. Dan?
Well, I guess that's my cue.
Yeah, well, here you go, my man. Hey, you're the star here.
Yeah, the other aspect that Sean knows very well about me, I have no future in politics either, and I'm not a very politically correct individual, and I'm okay with that. It just boils down to the short end of the comments here is that there's no political agenda with the Legends of MMA. There's actually like a board of directors, and people's names are brought up, irregardless of their affiliations with other companies and that, and they're strictly voted on their own merit. So I guess that was probably the best job I'll ever do at my political realm here right now. There's no favoritism here right now. You're just based upon your merit, your contributions to the sport, regardless. So that's what I like about the Legends of MMA. You know, for example, I mean, when you look at Art Davey, he was the creator of the sport in the very first place. He should have been really one of the first people ever inducted. Because he's the brainchild of this crazy, you know, what's known as mixed martial arts, but was known as no holds barred at that point in time. So I'm just happy that he is in and to be there as he was being inducted as well. So that was great.
Yeah,
and if you're just listening in, we are talking to Dan Severn and Sean, and we also have Mark on the line from Wombat. If you would like to call in and ask any questions, you've got a few minutes left. You can call in at 516-531-9649 and speak to any of our guests.
Yeah, I wanted to give you guys a quick recommendation next time you guys meet and try to decide on another person to induct. Megumi Fuji is more than deserving to be in that Hall of Fame as well. If you guys ever get the opportunity, she is a true pioneer of women's mixed martial arts. She's one of the best fighters that I don't think a lot of people know about.
Who was
going,
that?
Megumi Fuji.
Okay.
Yeah. If there's a first rounder, she is it. So
I've got, you know, and I've got another one, you know, as far as females that throw out there, you know, somebody I personally met in my time was Tara La Rosa, you know, and a lot of people might not know who Tara is, but she was a pioneer as well. We're certainly looking at a lot of people like that. And
yeah,
well,
I'm sure there's a ton
Dan,
out there,
Dan,
right.
Yeah.
We have
the,
a caller
the
on the line, Sean, so not to interrupt you, but we do have a caller.
No.
Hello.
Hey, caller, how are you? You're on the line.
Good, how are you? I'm a local high school coach, and I had a question about got some kids that you know, their dreams are about doing MMA, from transition from wrestling into MMA. What's the best scenario as far as how can I help get them prepared for it? Diet, just training, and you know, of course, you know, everybody has a dream of being a champion, you know. My thing is just want to give them the right tools to get them prepared for the MMA from, whether if they go to high school or they go to a college, wrestling program. Any suggestions?
Okay. You said that you're currently a high school wrestling coach?
Yes, high school wrestling
okay.
coach.
Okay. Well, a lot of it just boils down to, the education of aiming them in the right direction of a local MMA gym has good instructors, things of that nature, because you're only ever going to be as good as the people that you surround yourself with. So having a good gym, having good workout partners, it's the same dynamic of amateur wrestling practice. So you're only ever going to be as good as your workout partners and the coaching staff that comes along with it to help organize the various workouts. There is a lot of the same mental aspects, the physical aspects of pushing yourself and just drilling technique after technique, drilling the strikes, drilling the kicks, knees, elbows, the whole nine yards, and learning how to drill safely, to practice safely, to monitor their workouts and things of that nature. Because the same thing that happens at even an amateur wrestling where you have challenge matches. Because I coached both Arizona State and Michigan State, and I used to referee these challenge matches to see two guys that were so closely skilled level with each other that the frustration would get so high that eventually a lot of times they would break into fisticuffs. And so to me it's like you can't fight in amateur wrestling, but when this crazy sport of no-holds-barred fighting / mixed martial arts came along, now it gives a wrestler a green light to simply just do a quick double leg takedown, and then people are like pulling guard, and the amateur wrestler goes, "Hey, guard this," balls up the fist, and then smashes down in the ground and pound fashion, which a lot of people say is very barbaric. But when you simply just look at, I've always been a stats guy, and so when you look at just the pure stats of mixed martial art, 99.9% of the matches all end up on the ground, and they will be finished one of three ways. Ground and pound is still number one. A chokehold is number two, whether it be a triangle choke, rear naked choke, a scarf choke. And a scarf choke is basically the same thing that amateur wrestlers are very similar, used to of doing a headlock, except that they don't have to have that arm in there anymore. They can simply just take the head if they want. But even with the head and arm, if done properly, is still a chokehold. And then the arm bar, so like I said, top three, I would say those are your top three offensive moves. So the proper coach would be make sure that you practice defensively the top three most offensive moves as well. So it's with you being a wrestling coach and that, the same dynamics that you have done in your room as a wrestling coach are the same dynamics that you want to incorporate for these athletes that are looking to do mixed martial arts as well.
I was going to
come off of what Dan was saying also, obviously, we were talking earlier about definitely getting that education, because it's not a guarantee that you're going to be, you're going to be in the UFC, it's like getting into the NFL or the NBA. Definitely get some of those backgrounds in terms of the other things as well. I do want to say that, I was talking to a couple of, NCAA guys, gals, I should say. Sometimes, if you're not in the NCAA, you're not doing any kind of big, huge, team sport, you can do amateur matches during your college years. But if you're on an NCAA team, there might be some rules that you cannot do that. I've seen it both ways. Yeah. So they need to consult that if they want to do some amateur fights during college. If they have that opportunity, then I say go for it. And like I said, just take your time and get some of that experience under your belt before you turn professional. But yeah, yeah, just be aware that if you're an amateur athlete in another sport and inside of a college, you might want to check the NCAA rules.
Yeah, I help out with the local college as well, the wrestling program, and they're pretty good, powerful program. But you know, I'm trying to, you try to get them from high school, get them prepared, you know, to keep going throughout college if they want to go through it, and if they want to go into the MMA. My thing was just making sure that they're prepared. You know, you don't want, as a coach anywhere, it doesn't matter if you're nationally ranked or coach or so, you just want to make sure you're preparing the kids the right way, and you don't want to, never want to set them up for failure.
BJJ's always a great thing for you to do in the off season too. He always keeps you kind of in shape too.
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing. You know, sometimes, you know, when I talk to wrestling coaches, me being a BJJ instructor, you know, wrestling coaches have a fear of, well, if I send my, you know, kids off to jiu-jitsu, it's going to make the, you know, they're going to do the wrong thing when they come back to me with wrestling. And it's not that way. I have certain wrestling coaches that work with me a lot. I had Dan come and do a seminar. We love wrestling at our jiu-jitsu school. And I can't say that for every jiu-jitsu school, but certainly they're going to learn stuff from jiu-jitsu they can use in wrestling, and they'll understand the difference. They will be able to, you know. So what I would recommend is, obviously, too, if you have jiu-jitsu schools around you, I would check them out. You know, if you want to have somewhere that you feel comfortable recommending your students to go, you know, jiu-jitsu is going to go hand in hand with the wrestling. It really does. And, you know, like we have a philosophy at our school, and I teach, you know, a wrestling and judo blend here, and our philosophy is to get on top and stay on top. You know, where a lot of schools, you know, they like to play that bottom game a lot. I like for my guys to be on top. So you may want to look around and find a school that has that kind of a philosophy, you know, that works with what you guys are doing. But certainly, don't be scared of the jiu-jitsu, man. Don't be scared of recommending it. But make sure you recommend the right place. Do your homework and make sure they're going to a good jiu-jitsu school from a lot. So.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We appreciate it. All right, we have a few minutes left, and I know, Dan, you had some things you wanted to talk about you have coming up, and Mark, I know you have a couple things too. So, Dan, we'll let you have it.
Well, I mean, honestly, I don't know. I've got too much coming up, so I'm continuously always working in the ranks of mixed martial arts, amateur wrestling. Those are still my amateur wrestling is my first love because it's the thing that fits my most of my time, my life into. But my heart really goes out for the amateur level mixed martial arts because as I said earlier, it just differs rules from state to state to state, and I don't think that enough things have been put into place yet to really protect the amateur athlete. I'll continue to strive to help to do things that are on that level, but then also just stuff that I'm doing with Sean there and with the legends of MMA. You know, getting the word out more that there is a Hall of Fame that exists that does not have really any affiliation that ties with any companies or individuals. It's just an independent Hall of Fame where, again, we're board of directors are there, and they just says names are commended. Not all names. I mean, but you gotta realize that each year that there's only so many people that get inducted on an annual basis, and then those that don't get inducted the first time, you know, the names get carried on over, and I'm sure that the eventuality is that they will be inducted. And that's what I like about the Legends of Hall of Fame is that it is this independent company that just basically is, you know, kind of like the Constitution for the people, by the people.
Well, that's great. And I know, Mark, we got a little shout-out we need to give you about Wombat. So if you can do that, we got about 10 seconds.
WombatSports.com. You guys can check out all the amateur and professional MMA news as well. I also cover Muay Thai, kickboxing, wrestling. Obviously, I'll be covering a lot of the Olympic combat sports as well. WombatSports.com, at Wombat Sports on Twitter and Wombat Sports on Facebook. And quick shout out to the International MMA Federation. If there's any international amateur MMA athletes that are looking to compete on a worldwide level or get some opportunities to be able to get some exposure, please look up their organization. That's immaf.org, immaf.org. They are doing their world tournament. They've already qualified. They're pretty much a lot of their talent for their world tournament. But they know they do a European tournament later this year, and then they'll do another world tournament next year. So it's a great way to get exposure and a great way for you to test yourself against international competition.
Great. Well, thank you all for coming on, and you've been listening to Amateur Sports Talk, sponsored by AmateurAthletes.com.